Shishi of Vayetze is an intense aliyah, a confrontation, as much of Parshas Vayetze, the ongoing struggle with Yaakov and Lavan and in-law issues and all kinds of related things. So let's take a look at what's going on in this aliyah a little bit. The pasuk begins, Vayakam Yaakov, Vayisa is bana v'yasnash of alakmalam. So Yaakov is going to run away. So he gets up, and he puts his sons and his wives, he puts them on camels. What else do you do? So there was no Uber in that day. So that's off to go. Vayinhag eskol mikneyu, v'yaskol ruchusho asher rachash, mikne kinyano asher rachash b'fadan aram, lavo yitzchak aviv arza kenan. So he gathers up all his cattle and everything that he has acquired over there, which he has acquired in Padan Aram, to go to Yitzchak, his father. So to be with Yitzchak in his later years. Yos Naim Latorah has a comment over here. You see, it's, he makes him into a Shliach Mitzvah. Here he is at a time of Sakana. He's got both Lavan and Esav chasing after him. Again, this is a high drama. So the fact that he's a Shliach Mitzvah here helps. But the next pasuk talks about something which doesn't seem so mitzvahic, or it depends on how you interpret it. And that the pasuk goes on to say, "V'lavan halach ligzos esono." So Lavan, he goes to shear the sheep, and what does his daughter do? "V'tigno Rachel esatrafim asher laviha." So she goes and steals the trophy. So first of all, what a trophy! So it's not 100% clear. You look in Rebbein Abachia, he lists the different opinions. Trophim are clearly something a little strange. We usually relate to them as idols. Could be they are oracles. Could be they involved dead bodies or parts of dead bodies. Definitely a little bit on the freaky side. But whatever they weren't good things for a Jewish home. And Rachel steals them from her father. So why is she motivated to do this? So in the Zohar, in Ibn Ezra, it sounds like the issue is that Lavan had some way of using these as oracles. He was able to see what was going on. He was able to get information. And if they're trying to run away, so that wouldn't be so good for him to have this. It's basically leaving him with a tracking device. So therefore, she made sure to take care of those. And the Sefer Ma'oris Yitzchak, you see that if that's the case, it means that her motive was bikuach nefesh, and bikuach nefesh of her whole family. And this kind of sets the pattern of Rachel as the one davening on our behalf, the one who is looking to save us. So here she is already in that pattern. And that's one angle on what's going on with these items. Hi.
So seemingly, I mean, like it says that Lavan like was able to catch up to him really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So seemingly he didn't need the...
Yeah, it seems like he's a pretty good tracker, so imagine how much worse it would be if he hadn't. I guess, I mean, this is a pretty closely matched contest. This is not, so she needed to get whatever egg she could. This is not simple. He was quite the tracker. So that's one angle that it was about that. So others understand that it's simply about a Avodah Zarah.
Also, even further, like, he knew where he was going. Isn't it obvious he might have had success?
Maybe. I don't know if it's obvious, but or also I don't know if it's obvious what path we take. So they could possibly put some distance, but either way, I'm sure they at least want to get caught on the path where it's most dangerous. But the Bereishis Rabba, the Medrash, the angle that you have on this is that she was worried about her father's spirituality, that if she's going to be leaving, so she doesn't want to leave him alone with Avodah Zarah and with no motive to change. And to that extent, Rav Shamshon Fal Hirsch suggests that she is making a message here, which I guess shows her worthiness to be a shidduch for the Avram family, that basically she's making a point to her father, just like Avram did to his father, saying that if these trophim, they can't even protect themselves. They can't save themselves from being kidnapped. So how do you think they can protect you? And that was her way of making a message, making a display. But it's fascinating to note just how much we see, it's like last week's parsha and this week's parsha, that in the rabbinic literature, the assumption is not that their behavior of Yaakov and Rachel, Rivka last week, that the behavior is perfect, and that there is a cheshbon, that if people are suffering because of what's going on, that there is a price to be paid, and the Zohar suggests that because she stole from Laban and caused him this anguish, she didn't get to raise Binyamin. It's a pretty powerful, sharp onus. It's a very scary thought. There's also a fascinating little shtickle. There's a sefer called Kamatar Lichvi, which came out a few years ago, and it has collections from different Rashi Yeshiva and different Gedolim on the parasha. I'm not sure where all of it came from. It's very interesting stuff. So there's a short piece from Vlyashev that addresses this, and it's especially interesting because if you think about the fact that sometimes people are unfortunately and incorrectly merihetet to themselves to be lax with the property of non-Jews and to allow themselves liberties. So here you see Vlyashev has in this brief discussion such a fascinating perspective, and you see how opposite it is of that. So the brief discussion, Rabbi Yashiv asks, essentially, what was her heter to steal? Why is she allowed to take something away from her father? So he considers, well, maybe she thought that because it's Avodah Zarah, so Avodah Zarah is Asur Bahana, and therefore maybe it doesn't have any value. That's a big discussion in the Achronim in general. It's relevant in Pesach time and in other contexts, the question of whether Yisurei Hana have any actual value to them. Not able to use them, is there any monetary value? And if there's no monetary value, is there such a thing as bailus? Is there such a thing as ownership? This is a kisos, and many others far after him have lengthy discussions about this. Is there such a thing as owning something that's also bahana? And even if there's such a thing as owning, is there such a thing as transferring it? Because how do you sell something that doesn't have any value? How do you acquire something that doesn't have any value? So maybe you want to think, says that she was marihetter because since it's a Avodah Zarah, it has no value, and therefore it's not really stealing. No, is that a hand up?
Yeah, could you say that, like, that she uses the idea of Zahmar and Shul Fana, and that since Avodah Zarah is a negative thing, she has the idea by removing it, she's doing something positive for it?
So, you know, this is a discussion in later postgame, which I don't necessarily want to get into too much because it's a dangerous area for one to be Murahetar in again. But there is a discussion as to what extent does one have the right to be mafra somebody from Isser through depriving them of their property, which is a discussion in a couple of Svarim. Again, I'm a little afraid to get too into it. But it could be that there is a Svar like that, which I don't know if you have to go into Zachin, but that from the spiritual Zachin idea that, you know, Zachin in general, the problem is, it comes up in the context of Mechiras Chametz, you know, the question of whether you can say Zachin Me'odam Shalom Afanav, that the idea that you can give somebody a gift without their knowledge based on Zachin, based on the Zchus. So there's a whole discussion also in Ketzos and in the Trumas Hadesh and others, or Ashba, about whether there is such an idea of Zachin Me'odam. Can you say I can take something away from you because I think it's a Zchus for you? And that comes up again in the context of can you sell somebody's Chametz for them without their knowledge and the other such things. So that's a tricky thing, but in any event, that's not the angle that he considers. He considers that maybe she thought that it didn't have any value because it was Avodah Zarah. But then he goes on to say that, no, but that's not true, it doesn't have any value. Because an Oved Avodah Zarah, as opposed to a Jew, an Oved Avodah Zarah can be mevatel a chefetz shel Avodah Zarah. If he decides to deprive it of its Avodah Zarah status, it will lose that identification. So it potentially was valuable to Laban. And then he also goes on to consider that maybe even if he wasn't mevatel it, maybe he could still use it. Now the question, what he means by that, does he mean he could still use it because he doesn't care about whether it's also v'hana? That's the whole point. It's hard to imagine an Oved Avodah Zarah who's makbid on the halachas of not being nenef from an Avodah Zarah. So presumably he wouldn't care about that. So is that what he means, or does he mean that, no, that actually the whole Isser of being nenef from Avodah Zarah is only for Jews in the first place? So the footnotes in this Sefer, it has somebody wrote footnotes commenting on Rabbi Yosha's discussion here, and it gets into how it's a machlokas whether the Isser of being nenef from Avodah Zarah applies to non-Jews as well. So he says he doesn't really feel that this is a good answer. The thought that maybe she felt that this had no value, that wasn't the thinking, that doesn't seem to follow. So what he leaves with is that maybe, since the point was, as we read soon, that Laban cheated Yaakov out of his payment, so maybe she felt that this was legitimate, that she could take this as payment. But then the footnotes go on to say that that's schwer, because the Jews can't be nene from Avodah Zarah. So what kind of payment is it? So then you have to assume that this is Taluya, the whole discussion of whether the Avos had a status of Jews or a status of Bnei Noach. Because then if they had a status of Bnei Noach, maybe it would have some value for them. But the status of Jews, then it's hard to see how this could be taken as payment. It's not gonna have any value. Unless you want to say, which he doesn't say, that really she wanted to take it so that he wouldn't be alone with the Avodah Zarah. He wouldn't have this mitzvah. But he still had the problem with Gezel. So the problem with Gezel, she thought, okay, it's not Gezel because he owes me the money anyway, so I'm not being mafsid him money shaloki deal, even though we can't use the money, but it's not a problem with Gezel, and the motive to do it was to prevent him from engaging in Avodah Zarah or engaging in whatever oracle usage he would have used. But it's really just a fascinating discussion, whatever you make of the details, because again, you see those from Mori Heter to say that, oh, that somehow the property of an Avodah Zarah, of an Avodah Zarah one can take, you see how Rabbi Yosha's attitude is really so far from that, that not only is that not Heter, but that may make the details here more complicated, and it's a very interesting discussion. Hi.
It's kind of like a side point, but what's the stance sort of on emos? Like, did they follow the Torah, or did they learn Torah?
So that's a good question.
Like, so Yashin is, I guess, presumably pointing right to the fact that she knew the Sukkah, or that she...
Yeah, so that's a good question, especially because, as we see from later on the Aliyah, we can't say that she consulted with Yaakov about this, because Yaakov didn't know about this, so she'd have to be poskening on her own. So that's an interesting angle. Maybe she was. We don't know exactly. There is a lot to be said, especially if you search the internet, you can find some particularly pointed discussions about this and videos about this, about the question of just how far do we take the idea that the Avos kept Kol Torah Kula, which is based on a pasuk in last week's Parsha, and the Parsha's told us, so exactly what do we mean by that? Meaning that they knew every Mechaber Ramah and every Sos and Nesivis, which you sometimes find in some Sfarim, and then how far do we extend it? Extend it to all the Avos, the Shvatim, to the wives? It's a fair question. You could write an entire Sefer about that, and I'm sure someone is at least planning it, if they haven't yet. So there's a lot written about that, and there's a range of attitudes towards just how expansively to view this idea. Okay, so there's also an interesting comment, which I don't know if I would feel I could say, but if you're Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, I guess you could say. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has a comment over here where he says, what's the point in this whole story? Why do we need to know the story? What's the Moser Haskel? So he's not sure. He says, you know, is it to say that this is to give them, you know, from the dramatic perspective, to give the motivation of Lavan, why Lavan is running with such urgency after him, we should understand what he's going through. He said, I don't think the Torah does that. It doesn't try to give you the motivation of bad guys. You know, nowadays in art and culture, that's a big thing. You have to understand not just good guys, but the bad guys, what their motive is. He said, I don't think the Torah does that. So he doesn't think that that's going to be the explanation for what the story is here for. And he's not really sure, but he thinks that maybe the point, especially as it's filtered through Yaakov's response, the point is to show how completely mufresh from Gezel Yaakov was, that he couldn't even conceive of the idea that anyone in his entourage had this, and therefore this also goes back to the whole story with the sheep, that you see that everything must have been totally legit on the up and up, because you see how Yaakov was completely separate from all this. So this next pasuk says, "V'yignov Yaakov," things that mufresh from Gezel, but still, "V'yignov Yaakov as leiv Lavan ha'arami al-blihigilo kivareachu." So he was able to outsmart this Gneva slave idea, which is similar to what we call Gneva Das. He was able to outsmart Lavan in that he didn't tell him that he was running away. So the Osnayim Latorah has a little bit of a funny comment here. It says, yeah, he didn't tell him he was running away. That's the point of running away. When you run away, you generally don't leave a forwarding address, because that would kind of be against the whole purpose. So he has a little bit of discussion that maybe Goreach doesn't only translate as to run away, maybe it just means to go quickly, or maybe the pasuk is trying to say that that's why, the key is because, that he didn't tell him, why didn't he tell him? Because he was running away. So if you're running away, you're not going to tell where you're going. And that therefore also the Pasuk emphasizes Lavan Arami, that he was so sneaky and so sharp, and as Akiva pointed out, he was already on top of him, and that the only way he could have any chance here is not to tell him, so the Pasuk is explaining that that was going on. Vayivrachu v'chol asherlo v'yakom v'yavor es hanar v'yosam es panav har hagilot. So he fled with everything that he had, and he came up, and he passes over the river, and he looks towards Har Gilad. So by the third day, Lavan is told that Yaakov has run away. So he took his brothers with him, and he pursued him after 7 days of traveling, and he chapped him at Har Gilad. So you should be very careful not to hurt Yaakov. You shouldn't speak to him even in a way that's either good or bad. And some of the commentaries point out, okay, bad we got, so why not good? So the concern is, what would good mean for love? Whatever good might mean in his eyes probably wouldn't be so good for Yaakov. So he gets this azhara from a Kadosh Baruch Hu directly. But Yasei well to Nes Yaakov, Yaakov taka as olo b'har. So Lavan overtakes Yaakov, and Yaakov had established his tent on the mountain, and Lavan Lavan with his brothers established themselves on Har Gilad. V'yomer Lavan liYaakov, Ma'asisa v'tikno v'eslovavi v'tanaya g'eshbenosai kishvuyos charev. He says, what have you done to me? You know, here's again the drama and the confrontation. You've stolen my heart, you have fooled me, and you've taken away my daughters as if they were captives. What exactly, what kind of a son-in-law are you? Lama nachbeisa levroach v'tikna v'osiv lohigadita li v'ashalecha v'simcha v'vishirim v'sof v'chinor. If you are, you have to hide from me. And you could have just told me, and I would have given you a whole party, I would have sent you off nicely. There is a surprising comment here on the Yiznayim Latorah of Luskarov, who I always fond of quoting, as you know. He has a comment here which I don't totally understand. And then he says, you see from here that this is a non-Jewish idea, that when people leave, that you throw them a whole party, and you make a big banquet, as he writes. He says, that's not a Jewish idea. So I actually say in Marsha Kol, this is a big thing, so I'm a little offended by that. But he says that this is an idea that comes from Lavan. He says there's no mucker for this in Jewish practice. And he says it's like the opposite of what you find at the beginning of the parasha. The beginning of the parasha, Vayetze Yaakov. So Rashi famously says, it's see a sadek menamok amosaroshim. That panahuda, panahuda, panaziva. That when a tzaddik leaves, it takes away all the good things from the city. So you shouldn't throw a party. You should cry. You should be all sad when he's leaving. So this idea they would celebrate leaving. So this has got to be a non-Jewish idea. And then he goes on to say, and not only that, but when they have these parties, they don't just say miksa shvacho. They say kulo shvacho, and they say things that aren't true. And he thinks this is all a terrible non-Jewish practice. And this is the mucker, and it's not a good mucker. Okay. The mucker of Lavan is not a good mucker. Now it's interesting, just parenthetically, because we do sometimes learn things from Lavan. So, and to perhaps take issue with this, and we know, for example, that the idea of Eim Arvin Simcha V'Simcha, which in the Talmud Bavli is learned from the pasuk of V'Samachta V'Chagecha, says the Gemara V'Lo V'Ishtecha, but in the Yerushalmi it learns it from Lavan, that Lavan told earlier in the parsha. Lavan tells Yaakov that if he wants to marry Rachel, he can, but he's got to wait a week. So why should he wait a week? Because the Sheva Brachos of one shouldn't overlap with the Sheva Brachos of the other. So based on that, Yerushalmi learns the idea of Eima Arvin Simcha V'Simcha, and there's an essay about this in the Sefer Torah Tamima, The Torah Tamima wrote a Sefer on the Siddur called Baruch Shemar. So in his Sefer Baruch Shemar, he has a whole essay about this. Where would you think this would be in the Siddur? It would be in the beginning of the Siddur, appropriately, at Matovu, right? Who said Matovu? Bilam. So we quote Bilam at the beginning of the davening every day. Marshall is a tshuva where he says he has to say matov because of this. He doesn't think it's a good idea to quote Bilam, but the accepted practice in Klal Yisrael is we do quote Bilam. So the Torah Tmim and Hasei for Baruch Shemar has a whole essay about this, and he mentions also Molish Vuzos, this idea that we learn from Lavan, Im Arvin Simcha V'Simcha, and he has a whole essay there where he discusses this as a steer. It's not the kind of steer that would really keep you up at night, but it's a steer that you would bring up if you have a good answer. That the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, "Ezeh chacham halom mikol adam." Who is the chacham? Somebody who learns from everyone. But it's a steer, because the Gemara says in Talmud, "Ezeh chacham harayas hanolad," which we normally translate to mean somebody who anticipates what's going to be. It's a terrible steer. What's a chacham? Harayas hanolad, or someone who learns from everyone? So again, it's not the kind of question that would probably keep you up. You could say they could both be chachamim, but if you have a good word, so you say it. So his teretz there happens to be identical to an idea that Pardes Yosef quotes in his Hakdama. It says the same idea, that Roas HaNola doesn't mean that you see the future. It means that when you have an idea, you look at the Nola, you look at that which was created, at the idea itself, and you don't focus on the Molid, you don't obsess over who it is who said it. You look at the idea itself, and you look at the Nolad as opposed to the Molid, and to see if that's a worthwhile idea. So if we have a good idea, we take it. If it comes from love, and if it comes from Bilam, then we're willing to endorse that too. So maybe this is a good source for the banquets, I don't know. But in any event, celebrate birthdays like Paro, okay? Whatever it is, we have sometimes a good idea, sometimes it's a bad idea. So Yesh El Yodi Lasos Yimachem Ra Veluhei Avichem Emesh Amar Eli Lemor Yishamer Lacha Midaber Yaakov Mitovad Ra. So you see, he accurately quotes what Kodesh Baruch Hu, your God, said to me. And he says that I have the power. It's pretty scary, right? I mean, it sounds like a really scary confrontation. He says, I have the power to hurt you. But your God told me not to. So it's pointed out in some of the Svarim that you see that he learns this from the fact that God told him not to. And so God could have just stopped him, but apparently he maintains the Bechira to do it or not do it, but God told him not to. So it's interesting, if you look at the comment they recently published, the Chumash from the Rav, or the commentary of the Rav Soloveitchik on the bottom, which has a section from his essays about Pesach. And there he has a take. And in the Sfarim in general, there are different takes on just what exactly was the character of Lavan. So the Rav says, you see here, Lavan was a real psychopath. He says that we talk about Lavan in the Haggadah like he was a murderer, right? But in the Torah, he sounds like a trickster, a con man, doesn't sound so much like a murderer. So where do you get the context that he's a murderer? He says, you get it from here. The idea that he comes and he says, I could have hurt you, and he's talking plural, right? He's not talking just to Yaakov. Apparently, he's talking about his own daughters and grandchildren. He's talking about everybody. I'm so angry, I could have killed all of my family members. What kind of person talks like this? And he goes on to say how Paro was more stable than Lavan. Lavan was really dangerous, he was really psychotic. That's the word he uses. And that all comes out from this interaction. Not everyone has the same take. If you read the comments of Rav Moshe Feinstein on this pasuk and the Darash Moshe, so he sees him in a little bit of a less relatively evil light, how he was better than Esav, he has a discussion about, and that he makes this point that he was told by God not to hurt him, meaning that he has this opportunity to use his Bechira not to, and that he thought that maybe his Avodah Zarah was stronger than God, but that was his Bechira not to hurt him. Okay, so in any event, the next pasuk goes, V'yata halach halachta ki nichsof nichsafta lebeis avicha lamo ganavta es Elohai. So, okay, so you want to leave, so leave. So you want to go back to your house, go back to your house. But why do you have to steal my gods? That's the way he phrases it. Rav Shimon Shkop has a comment here, which if the assume is alpidar chadrush, unless one says it's really like a Freudian meaning here. But he says, okay, if you, Yaakov, you want to go back to your household, the ancestry of Yitzchak and Avram, so what do you need a Avodah Zarah for? If you have this Yerusha, you have this Marasha, you have this tradition of being from the household of Avram and Yitzchak, so there's no place for my Avodah Zarah. There's no need for you to take this Avodah Zarah together with that. That's totally inappropriate, and you should realize the value of your Masoras. So again, it's hard to say that's pshat in what he's saying, but that's a little bit alpidara chadrush, or again, maybe if you want to say that deep down he understood that that was his meaning. So the Yon Yaakov, Yom Lavan, Ki Aresi, Ki Amarti, Pen Tigzolos, Pnosecha, Maybe me. He says, because I was afraid that you are going to take your daughters away from me. So you have to say here that he's answering the previous question, because he's not answering why did you take my gods, because he doesn't think that he has the gods. So he's answering the first part, why did you leave without telling me? So I left without telling me because I thought you would stop me. And look, here you are. So, so you should look, no one here has them. If you think anyone has them, that person won't live. It's for sure not going to find them. So you see, clearly he's totally in the dark about this. So this is so dramatic. This whole aliyah is really like a movie. Right, so you can see, okay, he goes to the first tent, it goes to the second tent, it's not there, and then he gets to Rachel's tent. You can just see, like, Alfred Hitchcock describing this, as he talked about what suspense means, you know, that everyone knows where the item is, and we're waiting until the bad guy's going to find it. So he's looking, so here is the dramatic moment, and he comes to her tent to find it. And what's the story there? V'rachel locha satrafim. So she hid them under the camel saddle. So, and then she sat on top of it. So he looked everywhere else and he didn't find it. And then so she says, excuse me, I can't stand up because of the Derech Nashim. But, sorry, forgive me if I sit. And he looked and he didn't find. So this idea of sitting on them, Rav Nevensal has a whole sikha about this, in a sikha on Chumash, where he says that this power that these trophim apparently had for Lavan, that's a power of Avodah Zarah, and it works only for those who believe in it. And the whole attitude to have towards Avodah Zarah is to negate it. So this sitting on it was an intentional act of disrespect, and that's really the imagery of it, that she was negating the power of the Avodah Zarah there, and therefore it shouldn't have any power. And that's an idea that we find, you know, the notion that the therapists say you have to pay for your therapy, otherwise you're not going to be machshavit, you're not going to get anything out of it. So to the extent that you're machshav something, that's where the power comes from, and that's where she had to be mevatel. So, Vayichar, that's a good pasuk. Okay, so then just to quickly go on, Vayichar Yaakov Vayor Belavon Vayan Yaakov Vayom Belavon Ma Pishi Machatosi Kidalakta Acharoi. So now Yaakov's really angry. He says, "See, you're chasing after me for nothing. What are you doing?" Kimishashta is called Kelei Mamatzasa. They called Klei Besecha Simko Neged Achay VaAchecha VeYapichu Bein Shneinu. So what do you see? You don't find anything. Let's deal with this amongst ourselves. Zeh Eshem Shana Nochi Mach V'Chelecha V'Izecha Lo Shikelu V'Elei Tzoncha Lo Achalti. I worked for you for 20 years. Nothing bad ever happened to any of your animals. Treifu Lo Hevesilach Anochi Achatena Miadit V'Akshena Gnufsi Yom Gnufsi Laila. So you can see I never took any, I never gave you any losses. If there was a loss, I handled it. Hayisi Bayom Achalani Chorev V'Kerach Balayla V'Atidad Shnasi Me'enai. That's the way it was, that during the day I was taken up with drought and with thirst and with frost at night, and I moved sleep away from my eyes. And the Gemara in Balbetzia is Dafyomi pretty soon. The Gemara has, it's got to fill me in about another 3 weeks. The Gemara says that this is a raya, that's how a socher, that's how a poel has to work. That if you're working for somebody, you have to have that level of commitment like Yaakov. It's actually machlokas in the Gemara, but that's the conclusion. And that's what you need to have. And then he goes on to say that Zali Esrim Shana Beisacha Beticha Arba Esrei Shana B'Shteven Osecha B'Shei Shana B'Tzonecha B'Tachaleif Es Maskurti Aseres Monin. So I've worked for you for 20 years, 14 years, 7 for each daughter, and then another 6 years, and you changed my wages 10 times. And Rav Nevensal is a sicha about this also, how you see really these years were all very different, right? 7 years he agreed to for Rachel, and an extra 7 years basically trapped into with Leah. and then 6 years, which he was willing to do, but he was treated with the wages each time. So he could say, I don't have a different attitude towards each tufa. But he says, no, as Rosh Hashanah, you see, that's the attitude of an honest worker, that he doesn't start making this cheshbonus about how he got into the situation, but he works honestly throughout. And he says, Lule Elohe Avi, Elohe Avram, V'pacha Yitzchak Hayali, Ki Ata Reikav Shilachtani, Es Onyi V'es Yigi Akapi, V'es Yigi Akapai, Ra Elohim V'yochach Amash. So were it not for the God of my father Avram and the fear of Yitzchak, were it not for that with me, you would have sent me away with nothing. But the Kadosh Baruch Hu looks out for me. And the idea of Pachad Yitzchak, so Rashi explains, as opposed to says, Elokei Avram and Pachad Yitzchak, because we identify God with Avram and not yet with Yitzchak. Instead, we talk about the Pachad Yitzchak of the Akedah, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't associate his name with those who are alive. If you're alive, you still could have all kinds of changes, all kinds of future events. We don't know what they're going to be. So it's only somebody who's no longer alive. We have a picture of what exactly they represent. Only that HaKadosh Baruch Hu associates his name with. Okay, we will stop there. Wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos. We'll see you, got rolling on Monday. And